From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. My interview this week is the second part of my talk with dialect coach Lynn Sofer. If you missed the first part, you can check it out at our website, radiosausalito.org.
One of the reasons I specialize in British, I trained with a fabulous British dialect coach named Andrew Jack. He was the dialect coach and creator of a lot of the stuff on the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. And he has taught me a lot about standard British. And he said one of the things about the dialect that in England is given a lot of just natural status, a lot, or as you would say, status, and a lot of you believe in that dialect. He said, when people speak this way, people tend to believe them, even if they're talking rubbish. And it's so interesting because we have such attitudes about language and speech. I love it. The way we speak says so many things other than the content of the words.
Well, things have changed a lot. There is really no BBC accent anymore like there was when I was growing up.
Right.
Now you hear regional accents, and even in Parliament, you hear regional accents that you perhaps wouldn't have 30 or 40 years ago.
Right. It was unacceptable in the old days. The world has shifted. We used to get standard sounds from the BBC and from American television, and now it's become much more egalitarian, much more, it's fairer. It's more inclusive, but like with everything else, like the internet has brought us so much, but it has harmed other things in our culture and society. Some of my reference books are the BBC Pronouncing Dictionary of Names, because they were the authority. But it also meant they excluded all those regional speakers that now can get a job with the BBC. So it's good, and it's a shift.
Well, there was a moment there in the 60s where it became fashionable to be a Cockney rebel, you know, Michael Caine and all these lads, you know. Mm-hmm. And that lasted just a little while. Of course, Michael Caine managed to make a good career with it.
Well, he showed that he was so much more than just a Cockney. But, you know, that has changed. That's one of the reasons that Estuary is now considered the London dialect rather than RP. And why the kids going through theater schools, both in England and here, it's shifting even in the schools about what is expected. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, if you went to a school, a theater school, you were taught in England, you had to learn RP, and you had to speak it all the time as an actor. And in this country, you were taught to clean up your speech and get rid of your regionalism.
Sure.
And now I hear lots of people, both places, who aren't like that. I was listening to an ad for HBO's Game of Thrones that's so popular right now. And in the advertisement, they have these different speakers, and one of them is clearly, they're speaking in RP, and this woman has this elegant RP that she must have learned in acting school, because as she's talking, and she's speaking beautifully, and she's saying, be sure to watch it on HBO.
Oh, yeah, I hate that.
But by saying H, she's exposing that she doesn't actually come from an RP.
Exactly.
Background. I think it's interesting, when Margaret Thatcher died, I wasn't aware of her background, growing up a grocer's daughter in the apartment over the grocery shop, which means she can't possibly have spoken the way she ended up speaking when she was prime minister.
Correct.
Because she spoke a very elevated RP. She used that as a weapon. It was part of her Iron Lady power.
Yeah, she wanted to sound regal.
Yes, and she basically was saying, you have to listen to me and do it my way because I am as good as the Queen. And she did that with dialect. In America, would say that's a self-made woman. You know, that's someone who took her brains and her possibilities and turned it into top-notch success. But you'll notice her equivalent over here, that actor, Ronald Reagan, who became president, one of the things people loved about him here was he sometimes sounded just like one of the folks. And that was a big part of George W. Bush, sounding like one of the good old boys from Texas. And it's the opposite in England, although that's changing. That's what you're getting with David Cameron. And Tony Blair had some of the estuary sounds.
He did.
It's shifting.
This estuary, I think that maybe should explain, it has to do with the Thames estuary and the,
right.
the area surrounding the Thames estuary, which is a specific accent from the London area, right?
Yes. It's southeast England, and it's they're saying that unlike Cockney, which was originally only in the east end of London, this is a dialect that's sort of spreading out from London along the Thames River and the estuary of the Thames, which runs through London. And so it's more inclusive. Like in Abigail's Party, it includes the suburbs outside of London, but in the general area of the Thames estuary. It's higher than Cockney and lower than standard British. And it's becoming the sound. It's becoming what we are going to think of as London regionalism. I remember the Sloane's Rangers, which was more Princess Diana's crowd.
Yes.
And they had that very artificial RP.
Let me ask you this on another topic. Have you ever had any run-ins with actors or directors who thought that they were doing things right and resented you coming in and telling them what to do?
Oh, yes.
Tell me.
I've had a few. Occasionally, I will have an actor who feels, I know how to do this. If you give me a note, in some way, that's a terrible insult. Which is interesting because, as you know, I'm also an actor. And when I act, sometimes if I have a smaller part, I'm asked to do the dialects on the show I'm in. I've done that, but I prefer to have a dialect coach giving me feedback. The fact that I'm an expert doesn't mean I'm not also a flawed human being. So when I'm acting, I want somebody outside saying to me, "Eh, that sound's going off," or "This doesn't seem right." A lot of actors have a lot of ego, and very often it's based on insecurity. So twice I've coached actual expatriate British people. I coached one a few years ago who was nasty to me when I gave her a few notes, because when you live in a country for a while, your dialect starts to change.
Yeah.
You're infected by the sounds around you. It's like every once in a while I open my mouth and a big fat California sound leaps out because I live here. And so I gave her a couple of notes. I said, you know, this one sound tends to get lost by a lot of British people who live in America, and it sounds to me like it could be tightened up a little bit. And she then proceeded to treat me like I was Attila the Hun and Adolf Hitler's illegitimate love child. She was so vicious to me through the rest of the run of that show, and I was in it, that people didn't understand. They thought maybe I had done some horrible thing to her because she was going to punish me for giving her a dialect note. I've never had a director who resented it because they usually ask for it. And if you don't want a dialect coach, even if the theater says we've got money for it, they can veto it. They can decide, no, 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 it would be a problem. My only difficulty with directors is sometimes they think, oh, that's not important, we'll deal with it later. And later is very often too late. But most directors trust me. They bring me in because they think I can complement what they're trying to do, not go against it. It's also a question for me to win people's trust over, to get them so that if I give somebody some notes and they are hesitant to trust me, maybe they've had a bad experience in the past, say, an actor, if I can convince them, well, try this, see this, maybe this will help. And if they get from me that I'm not dictating and I'm encouraging and helpful, if they feel it helping, then they start to, you can watch them relax and start to trust you. But it's the same thing in everything in the theater. Sometimes people don't trust a costume that's made for them, or they do and have a better experience. It's about, you know, working and communicating. It's not often. Most actors and directors say, oh, thank goodness you're here. We need help. It's one of the great things about theater. When it's going right, it's this marvelous collaborative event where everybody gets to throw things into the pot and make a wonderful soup. I just did that tag, you know? Only I actually meant it. Do you know what I mean?
Let me ask you something else. Give me an example of a big success with dialects.
A big success with dialects would be the fabulous Susie D'Amelano in Abigail's Party. Susie's a wonderful actress, but she doesn't start with dialects. I was an actor for whom dialects were easy. They're not that easy for Susie. And Susie is an example where we went into this, and she was concerned, will I be able to get this middle ground dialect? It's not RP, it's not standard British, and it's not low Cockney. And will I get it, and will I get it natural? Make it natural. And she and I started work before they even went into rehearsals, and I encouraged her throughout, and she got the dialect, but then it wasn't free enough, and so I encouraged her. Susie is very talented, but she's also very trusting and very open, and that made a difference. So I would say on this show, that was a huge success.
Let me ask you about Nicholas Nickleby, because that was a show that, you know, when I went to see that show, I sat there in the audience thinking, I wish I was up on stage doing that with them. It was so fabulous.
Yeah. I felt the same way. That's such a thrilling show. That's one of my most exciting, happiest times in the theater ever. Dialects were such a huge part of creating that world. John Moscone said to me after it was over, he said, you made me realize that you're like one of the designers of this show. On this show, that sound is so important. You're helping me design the show.
That's great.
Yeah. I felt very thrilled that a director would see that. I've learned so much from so many wonderful people, and hopefully I've elaborated and expanded on it.
Well, it's a fascinating field, Lynn. It's absolutely fabulous. Let me ask you this. What's up next for you?
Next for me, we've just opened 3 shows, Abigail's Party. I also coached Beauty Queen of Lenan at Marin Theatre Company and Crispy Critters and Scarlet Knight at Cutting Ball. Those 3 are running. The first show at Cal Shakes, American Night, the Ballad of Juan Jose, is going to open next weekend. Then I return to my teaching at ACT, and I'm also going to be directing a dialect play, The Importance of Being Earnest, at Stanford Summer Theater this summer. We open in July. I'm directing it, and I'm also the dialect coach, so they better sound good.
They better shape up.
Yes.
Well, if you want to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, I recommend you head over to see the San Francisco Playhouse production of Abigail's Party. They're a terrific company. It's a funny show. For more information, go to sfplayhouse.org. And of course, you'll also be able to enjoy the spot-on English accents, courtesy of Lynn Sofer. And Lynn, congratulations on your wonderful career, continued success, and thanks for taking us on a field trip today.
Thank you, Mitchell.
That's Lynn Sofer, everyone. Well, thanks for joining me today on the field trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that the field trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, anytime on your computer at radiosausalito.org, and 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.